Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Kerr Hallenbeck. The most menacing ailment of the human species is not cancer or acquired immune deficiency syndrome or heart disease or a multitude of other conditions that endanger its life, but ego doing the bidding of the lower nature. This quote from a book we'll be exploring today on this installment of the Godspeed Institute. Carol Blair is the author of more than 20 books, including 5 volumes of poetry. His latest book is Human Natures of Animal and Spiritual, which champions a philosophy of human evolution through spiritual growth. The 6th Annual National Indie Excellence Awards has recognized Human Natures as a finalist in the category of philosophy. Beautifully written in poetic vignettes, the book offers thought-provoking insights into the challenges that continue to plague humankind and sheds light on the principles that would enable humanity to move forward. Carol, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's a pleasure.
Now, let's begin a little with your own journey. What led you to write Human Natures?
Well, I guess the beginning of it, or the planting of the seed, if you will, was sometime before the actual writing of it. It was a lot of thinking about how I found the world, like basically the human world, and its behaviors. It really wasn't quite as noble and good as a lot of times it is suggested, by and large. Of course, that does exist. But, in some way or other, I think we've kind of inflated that side a bit, and played down, the more ignoble traits that I think really need to be addressed, especially now, in a time with the technologies that we have at hand and over 7 billion people on the planet, the clashing of self-interests. We're in a situation right now where we need to really get serious about it. It's no longer a choice if we're going to evolve or not, or change our ways of behavior. But anyway, so I started to take a look at history also. And, I saw that there was more base impulses, more animalistic impetus in the operations, or that meaning. So I began to think more and more about why this was. Why a species of such gifts and potential as the human species just can't seem to get out of the rut of committing the same mistakes over and over again, getting trapped in the same corruptions that have been the bane of human progress. And I came to some conclusions about this, that we can just discuss through the course of the show. So.
Sure, thank you very much. Yes, so you're saying we as human beings have a nobler nature, and on some level we know this, either consciously or unconsciously, but our base impulses, which are basically all we hear about in the news, and which seem to be a little more popular, I guess, or more interesting to people than our more beneficent actions, need to be addressed because we see where this is going.
Yeah, well, I think that modern media, I don't really count for them. I mean, they just want anything that'll sell, some headline right now. So they want something that's going to try to strike something people. But I don't think that they're really serious about addressing what really needs to be done, because they're part of the problem too.
Right.
So it's not that. But if you look at history, I mean, of course, we have examples of some very exemplary behavior. And we've seen through spiritual masters, I mean, this is documented, that what we're capable of doing,
right,
what we're capable of aspiring to. But the problem is that there's not enough people going that way. There's not enough people moving away from an egocentric way of life, something that's basically just concerned with, one's own life, maybe one's life and one's family, a circle, but not really thinking about how it how they impact, you know, others, what they do, you know, is it really to the good of, you know, all really? I mean, like we have to stretch our consciousness beyond just our own lives, and so there's just been to me there's not enough people now going the way. See, before up until maybe about the 20th century, we could get away with you know, making a choice of it individual by individual if you wanted to do the hard work, the hard inner work to try to transcend, to transform, you know, to live, you know, better than just day-to-day existence.
Right.
So we had a choice, basically. But now, well, what's going on now, and there was always a small minority throughout history, like, as I said before, you see examples of that.
Right.
But now we've kind of backed ourselves into a corner with technology, because technology has taken a quantum leap. Okay, so like in the past 120 years or so. So now we have thousands of hydrogen bombs. We can decimate the environment at an alarming time rate. And we see that the real issue now is that we haven't advanced in a comparable measure spiritually, mentally, emotionally.
May I say something to that?
Yes, go ahead.
Because you know, your thoughts are getting my own going.
Oh yeah, of course.
Well,
please cut in anytime you wish. Yeah,
I think
that's good.
I think it was it might have been Daniel Quinn in his book Ishmael who suggested that technology became what we evolve now. We stopped evolving, and now it's all about the new forms of technology and the newest forms of technology. And I think when we see how much excitement goes out there because of the new gadget,
that's
or the new
exactly
version
it.
Of the new
toys
of the new gadget,
whatnot.
We see that. I mean, it's a fact, and that perhaps human evolution has stalled somehow on a sort of a mass level. What would you say to that?
Well, yes, I mean, that's absolutely true. As far as, see, we don't use, the reason why we don't use technology in a wise and intelligent manner, or certainly not the wisest, because, as I said, we haven't advanced spiritually, mentally, emotionally on the same track. So you still have, to me, I would say, the lower nature, you still have that basically in charge of the major operations throughout the world. And that's what we see. And, you know, there are exceptions here and there, but that's basically it. And as far as, see, I don't think that collectively, as a species, we've ever advanced that far in spirituality. But I say, there was always individuals here and there that have shown the way to a better way. Now, getting back to the problem, see, technology is a double-edged sword.
Right.
Because, you know, like on the one hand, we have all of this power at our disposal, which we could use for good or ill.
Right.
But on the other hand, we're not mature enough. See, we haven't reached that higher level of consciousness collectively, or at least enough of us, to really make good use of it. And now it is a question of not only, you know, advancing, it's about survival, really, or creating a world in which it will hardly be worth living.
Or, on the other hand, I sound like Tevye now, it also allows us to have the conversation that we're having.
Yeah.
Where you're in your world, part of the world, I'm in my part of the world, and there are people all over the world, you know, listening to us right now because of this use of technology, which is a very conscious choice that we're making.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You know, absolutely, there are some great things going on with that. But when you spend trillions of dollars in weaponry,
right,
and you can, you know, eliminate poverty if just, you know, if higher consciousness with every nation were sitting at the table and saying, okay, let's start thinking about what's really just and fair and good for all. I mean, these you know, just think of what could happen there, like if those resources went to that. But again, it's just self-interest, just short vision, avarice. Really, I mean, there's a lot. See, people talk and talk, you know, truckloads about, you know, changing the world and doing this and that, especially in the political arena. But nothing ever really, I mean, nothing, so little gets done. I mean, there are people who are serious about really doing some, you know, hard work and really doing what actually needs to be done. But most people, as I find, there's a lot more talk than action, and that's the problem, too.
Well,
also,
yeah.
The focus is in the wrong place.
Yeah, well,
you know, like the focus is on the symptoms and not the cause.
Exactly, and of course, the result is going to have to include some form of sacrifice for ourselves, and that's probably another area where it begins to stall. But
and the more we let this go without addressing it in a serious manner, the more sacrifice it's going to take.
Right.
And it seems that the less people are going to be willing to step up. This is a real catch-22 here.
I know.
Because, yeah, we keep putting it off and putting, you know, it's almost like the national debtism, right? So you don't want to make the tough decisions and do what you need to do now so we can have a smooth sailing later. No. So you just put it off. In the same way, we're building up a spiritual debt.
Right.
In a way, you know?
Oh, exactly.
And
yes.
And so, you know, and there's a lot of talk also, like in the New Age, it's, they give, you know, a lot of, you know, people like to hear that they're divine beings and they're extraordinary and they're special and, you know, and that sells a lot of books and all. But, I don't believe that as a species, again, collectively, I don't think we've earned the right to be thinking in those terms right now, because when you look at history, you don't have to be a genius to see that most of that is not of enlightenment, and
right.
You know, most of that is not noble behavior and noble doings.
Right.
So you know, let's stop telling us how wonderful we are and start thinking about, let's look at what we're really doing here that you know, really needs fixing. And get serious about that. Otherwise, don't talk about it and just pretend that, I'm really interested in doing good for the world. But then you won't even do anything like recycling. You know,
right.
Like you won't even bother doing that. I mean, you know, just a lot of little things that you can start with. So,
We have
a lot of problems, but, you know, I'm still, I say that even though, you know, that's going on, it doesn't mean that you can give up yourself. So I'm trying myself, you know.
No, I know. I understand. And at times it does seem that, you know, the problems are so great, you know, even just one person at a time may not be able to meet it. As we look at the, you know, economies just collapsing like dominoes across the world, or the environment is quivering in fragility, or the parents are worried about, you know, what kind of future is my child going to have? And one of the lines from your book that I just love says simply, "Ego demands a crown as it goes about in chains."
Absolutely. And also what you see out there, see, what you see in the outer world, in the human world where we have our footprint, so to speak, what you see there is manifest of what's inside. See, like the outer is manifest of the inner. So when we look out in the world and we see all these things going on with the economy, with the environment, with injustice, and again, injustice, I mean, this has been going on
forever.
So, all of these things are new. They just take on different forms and different people come and go on the stage, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But this is what, so again, I come back to one of the basic theses of the book is that the focus is in the wrong place. We focus on symptoms, basically on the manifestations of it, like treating the effect instead of the cause, instead of dealing with the root. See, because that takes a lot more courage to do that, doesn't it? See, to look at yourself and say, you know what, I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Right.
I'm not as noble as I thought I was. I could do better. I mean, it's painful, see? But, there's a lot of people that really, they don't really want to do that. They don't want to go there. They just want to say, no, it's this political party, it's that institution, it's that law. If we just change this around and everything will be fine.
Right.
That's not the case, and that's not going to happen.
Right.
So
that's why this your premise is human evolution through spiritual growth.
Yeah,
that
spiritual
has to happen
inside.
True.
You know, I probably should make a statement about what I mean by spirituality here. What I'm talking about really is not like in a dogmatic sense. It's not restricted to any religion, but it's just basically trying to develop those better traits, those more nobler traits, and live by those as we've seen people that have came before us were able to do. Just maybe you could even say what Lincoln said, like the better angels of our nature or something.
Right.
And to me, if you're really serious about religion, There is some separation, a distinction between religion and spirituality. We could probably talk about that. But if you're really serious about it, it shouldn't matter what religion you belong to or what God you believe in or what, you know, faith or that you profess,
right,
that you embrace. It should be about trying to live in a less selfish manner, trying to be more considerate.
Right.
More kind, more thoughtful of what you're doing. We are only here, it's like a blink of an eye in cosmic time, right? We are here for a very short time, maybe less than 100 years, and then we're gone. And a stream of time of billions of years. Now, what sense does it make to come into existence, to come into being, and just say, let me see, how can I enjoy myself? What can I get for myself? How can I just, self-gratification at the moment? I don't care how it impacts anybody else. I'm just going to just, look out for me, and that's fine. What sense does it make to do that instead of maybe, on the other hand, think about, the world's got some problems. How can I contribute? How can I help? What can I do to make the world better? And by doing that, you go the way of a purposeful life. You see, meaning and purpose is something that you create. It's not something that you discover. You have to create that.
Yes, and the saying comes to mind, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Well, I don't know. You probably won't like me if I say this, but I was, I don't really agree. Again, I know that's bantied about there in the New Age talk, but to me, I don't really think that's true. I think that what I think we have a potential to activate a spiritual life.
Yeah.
I think it's in the potential. I think that's what the gift is. So to say that we're spiritual beings right from birth, I take issue with that because we are potentially spiritually, we have the potential,
right,
to activate a spiritual life, but it's not there yet. That's another problem, too. People act as if all they have to do is realize how wonderful they are. It's like clicking their heels three times and they're in the land of enlightenment.
Right.
That's not what it's about. See, the gift is the potential, but we have to do the hard work to get there.
Right.
I can maybe read a couple of quotes from the book to make my point, if you wish.
Well, I wanted to share something as well. So,
all right.
Let me say one thing, and then we'll get into some excerpts.
No, okay. Well, no,
because you're really touching on so many things here. When I was in a theology class, the question came up, what is spirituality? And it was posed to the class. And many answers came from many diverse people, male and female, from around the world. Spirituality is prayer. Spirituality, is belief. It's faith. It's all kinds of answers. And then the professor responded after hearing everyone and said simply, spirituality is transcendence. And
yeah,
it's that the core of that you're talking about, the development of the inner self, the conscious work at it, the moving beyond ourselves and our own needs, is that kind of transcendence, that moving forward or upward, if you would, as you referred to the lower and higher natures.
Yeah, well, that refers to what I was saying about doing that inner work. We have the choice to go that way if we want to. We have the potential; it's there. But the thing is, it's very, very hard work. And I think what a lot of people miss or they don't want to see is that, if they just pray to some higher power, and if they, just wishful positive thinking, that's going to get it done, or at least they hope so. And that's not really the case. There's a saying in the Christian doctrine, that God helps those who help themselves. I believe that. I think we have the responsibility to do everything in our power to do what we can to further our lives along, upward, as individuals and collectively as a species, and then let the powers that be help us out, But it's not going to be just some magic wand. It's not going to just come across the sky and everybody's going to be enlightened.
Right.
But that's, So,
Carol, why don't you share something from the book?
Well, no, I was just thinking that there was just a couple of, again, about the potential. See, because I was thinking about that saying. It's funny that you brought that up. And I think, this is a show of free thinkers, right?
Right.
So that's it. So I don't think that's correct. This is actually the first thought of the book after the prologue. I say, it cannot be said that man is a spiritual being until he begins to live through the higher nature that is available to human life. He is a living spiritual entity, only potential, if he wills to be, works to be. You see, we have to do that work. See, like to me, as I see it, the gift is the potential. And no other animal on the planet, no other species has that, and that's a tremendous gift. It may even be no other in the universe, and that's an even more awesome gift. And with that great gift to me comes a great responsibility. I'll just say one more other excerpt that speaks to this. It is a presumption to consider oneself born into life as a spiritual being without having made the journey or engaging the work necessary to actualize a living spirituality. See, a lot of people, they like to fancy themselves, I mean, as if the potential has already been realized.
Right.
And it has not. And most individuals, some, yes, absolutely, some have done it. And we know, you know, we can see that. But most of us haven't gotten there yet. Most of us aren't even working on that. You know, so.
And there are a couple of other lines I'd like to quote as well. One is, every time the baser course is chosen over the higher, the world is betrayed.
True.
And another is, the law of the jungle or the way of the light. This is the choice that must be made. And I have to say, Carol, when we do this, of course, the phrase free will comes to mind.
Yes, well, I do believe in free will. I mean, if we don't have that, I mean, then we have nothing. I mean, then everybody has an excuse for anything goes. So, you know, if we don't have free will at all, then, you know, then we're just like in some unconscious ride for, you know, and just, you know, like just to have it slam into a cosmic wall or something. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, people can, all right, this is what I'll say. I believe in free will. I believe in responsibility,
okay.
Individual responsibility. I believe that everyone should do as much as they can. Yes, help them absolutely in every which way. I mean, I believe in a selfless life. I believe in a life that isn't about oneself at all. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we can say, well, you know, so often, like I hear the phrase, well, we're only human. I mean, when we mess up, right, when we make
right.
a mistake, well, we're only human. What do you expect? But then we're ready to applaud ourselves for the slightest achievement.
Yeah.
You know, wow, isn't this great? Wow, aren't you wonderful?
Yeah.
And instead of stepping up when we do wrong, or maybe, you know, well, you say, well, you know, maybe I could have been kinder there. Maybe
yeah.
I could have been more generous. I have to work on that, you know?
And it's interesting that you point that out, because we're living, especially I think in the West, in a time where our culture is so achievement and award-oriented. But it's a very empty kind of thing, because that's not where your genuine self-esteem comes from. It really comes from your character and the choices that you make.
Yeah.
In your life. And I think we're maybe beginning to see the concern about that, especially in the schools and the pressure on kids about competition that really doesn't mean anything.
Well,
does
yeah,
not make
I mean,
them
the thing
doesn't
about,
make them better people, doesn't make them, you know, a better contributor to society, but it sure makes them stressed out.
Yeah, but look at the self-esteem movement of the past 30 years or so, right? I mean, telling kids that you're wonderful just because you exist. There's no one like you, and, you know, you're just great. You know, like they even have things. I mean, I to be honest, I don't see anything wrong with.
No, I happen to agree with that,
yeah.
But that's not necessarily where it ends.
Well, no, but, well, yeah. Okay, now, if you want to know why the slackening of standards of education what the reason is for that, I think it is at least in part, because of the slackening of expectations from the children, are just saying, no, you're wonderful, you're okay, everything's great, you don't have to work too hard, you can go out and play, you play your video games, this and that, you're just fine, oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, the slackening of discipline, to me, I mean, like the only discipline, of course, that really works is self-discipline. I don't think it can be imposed from the outside, but to
right.
teach by example, you know, teach what real. You know, to me, I think that the standard of the human world, I mean, we should look to the best that have walked the earth. We should look to the best, you know, the saints, the great prophets, the great artists, the great teachers, and say, okay, you know what? And I'm talking about across the world, not just the West, everyone.
Yeah,
say,
all
traditions.
Look,
you see that?
Yeah.
That's the standard. I mean, not to embarrass anybody, not to make anybody feel like they're low, no, but just get real about that. That's what it's about. Don't get hung up on this stuff on the TV, that these come-and-go pop stars and this and that, and these, you know, that are here today, gone tomorrow. No. Look at the best for all time and judge by that. And also see if you can have the courage to see where you stack up to that. And again, not to embarrass anyone or make anybody feel bad, but, you know, humility, I think, is a good thing. I think we don't have enough of that.
Right.
I think it's too much self-esteem and we're wonderful. No, I think, let's take a good look at that. Let's take an honest look at that.
Yes, and of course, humility has two sides to it. It's not, you know, people might perceive it as, you know, not overstepping one's bounds and you know, sort of being self, you know, deprecating that way. But humility, true humility, also means stepping up to the things that you can do.
Right.
And owning that.
Right, and also admitting to yourself, I mean, you don't have to put a, you know, ad in the paper or like an advertisement, but admitting to yourself where you've been wrong.
Yeah.
And where you can make improvements of your, because that's where it starts, you see. It starts inside. It's not, the problem's not out there, it's in here. So I think that every individual, you know, should, instead of thinking that, you know, they're great just the way they are, that, or I was born this way or whatever, you know, look, you know, there was an interview that I did, and somebody brought up the question about ego, and they were saying, well, if, you know, everybody is, you know, born with ego, I mean, why, how should we rid ourselves of ego if everybody's born with ego? So, I mean, I this is basically what I said. I said, well, okay, now, ego in the sense of a self-centered, selfish-oriented state of being must be outgrown if humankind is to advance in its evolution. Early in human existence, given the harsh conditions of the wild and hazardous terrain of life and death that our distant ancestors were faced with, a predominantly self-centered base of operation was necessary to their survival. But now, a self-interest above all else manner of living on a large scale will not only prevent humankind from moving forward, but fashion a world in which a promising future could be nothing more than a fantasy. It would, in fact, at this point in human history, be counterproductive to hold on to an egocentric way of living and thinking. And then they would say, okay, now about to the question of being born with an ego, I said this. I said, a caterpillar is not born a butterfly. It transforms into a butterfly, and in the process sheds features that are of the caterpillar.
Right.
In the same way, not everything that humans are born with should remain through their lives, or can remain, if they are to grow into the most beautiful and elevated of human forms. You see, if we just tell ourselves, well, that's the way it is, I don't have, you know, I can't help it, you know, then you don't grow, then you don't really contribute to the problem, you know, the problems that we've been talking about that need to be addressed. Otherwise, you know, we're not in for a very good future. So.
Yes, and there's another line in your book about going beyond, you know, the ancestral need of survival, where you say it is what man does beyond what he needs to do to meet the needs of survival where his contributions to life or crimes against life begin.
Yeah, well, see, again, I mean, just...
It's a powerful line.
Just think of the environment, what we do with that, right? Okay, mm-hmm. So... See, I think that humans, right, like, you know, like they're a part of the whole. I think they have a responsibility to find harmony with that whole, right?
Right.
You know, to live in a spirit of cooperation rather than domination.
Right.
Every species on Earth does exactly what it's supposed to do to keep the sacred balance of nature in order.
Right.
Except the human species.
Yeah.
You know, man is like the proverbial bull in the china shop, right, in his relation to nature. And why is this? I say it's mainly because of avarice, of wanting more and more and more and more, much more than he needs, right? He's operating from a selfish base. Short-sighted, callous, is gravely unwise to do that. No other species takes, you know, more than it needs to sustain its life or destroys the habitats of other species in the process of securing its living. We're the only ones that do that. And the absurdity of this behavior is that it's not only destructive to other life, but also our own. So we're compromising the ecosystems of which our very existence depends. See, that's how short-sighted and blind greed is. That's how crazy it is. See, even to the point of irreversible harm. See, I mean, so, yeah, I mean, that's it. See, so we've gone as yeah, I mean, like, there are some people struggling, of course, in poor countries, third world countries, and the reason why we have third world countries to begin with is because, again, greed, you know, exploiting people, like using people for just labor, you know, just looking at them for objects to feed a big economic machine. I mean, there shouldn't be that. See, if we were living, truly living through a spiritual consciousness, a higher consciousness, we wouldn't have that.
Right. Right. And, yes, of course, greed and stagnation go together, and we're going to explore more of this conversation in the second half of the program. We're about halfway through. Carol, stay on the line. We're just going to take a short break. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. When we return from the break, we'll continue our conversation with Carol Blair, poet and author of the new book, Human Natures of Animal and Spiritual. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with an old favorite. Stay with us.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You are live with CARE, and we're talking with Carol Blair, poet and author of the new book, Human Natures of Animal and Spiritual. And that was Marillion with their rendition of Blackbird, a song about healing, about waiting for this moment to arrive so we can fly. It pertains to today's program and the book that we're discussing. We're talking about human nature. The higher nature, the lower nature, greed and stagnation, and what human beings are called to do, and how we can meet our nobler nature in this world to help us proceed. Carol, let's revisit here the subject of spirituality. In your book, you mention in education, one does not enter college before going to elementary school, yet many go into the world in pursuit of careers with college degrees even without an elementary development of the spiritual dimension of their lives. Can we explore that and the impact of that kind of mindset?
Well, that's what I mean. What we talked about before is about the inner work and not really engaging that. You know, we're born into the world, and now a lot of us are born into a certain religion or whatnot, but it's not really taken seriously. At least to the point. I mean, it is to some point, but not to the point needed to actually take those teachings out into their lives. For example, a lot of people go in, you know, they go to church every week, or, you know, mosque, temple, what have you, but they don't try to live by the best teachings that they profess to believe in. They leave the temple and they go out into their lives, and then they're still just looking at how they can get up on the other person, and not really being as kind as they should be, not really trying to live you know, like in, you know, in a more spiritual manner. And yes, it's, as far as the idea, as far as elementary school, I was using that as a metaphor or,
right.
or simile that everything is outer focused. So you're born into the world, and in this case, so you grow up, so you say, all right, you have to go to grammar school. As you go there, you know, like you do that, you know,
yeah.
work at this, and then through high school and stuff. But again, that inner work, the real inner work, which actually takes place by oneself, a lot of solitude. It doesn't mean you have to go up in the woods somewhere or in a cave. I mean, but you just, I mean, real self-introspection, taking stock about where you are in your development. A lot of people neglect that. It's all out of focused. So then they get into their, you know, they go to, they have their college degrees and they go out into their careers, and they're not thinking about, well, let me see, how am I being, or certainly not as, you know, with a lot of people as much as they should. Am I being fair to this person here? Is it just about what I want? Is maybe we can work a deal out here where it's what's best for both of us, what's fair? How are my decisions, like if you're in a position of authority, how are my decisions, like on my company, how is that impacting the community?
Right.
Of which way? I mean, just those things, and they're not thinking of that.
I know. How am I treating the people I encounter in the company? Am I building up or tearing down?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. and I come back to the point, we're here for just a brief time. Each one of us, this is a temporal existence for all of us. What you believe after life, that doesn't have anything to do with the point that I'm making here. It's like, while you're here now, what sense does it make to just think in an egocentric, selfish manner? What sense does that make? I mean, it's not only immoral, it's not only wrong, not only unethical. To me, it's stupid. I mean, I don't understand that mindset. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah, and it makes me question if we've actually forgotten something along the way, rather than just having not learned it, but that, you know, at some point earlier on in human history, I mean, in the beginning, there was more awareness.
Well, I don't know. See, the, yeah.
Of the holistic nature of our
lives. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Right. If you want to look at it, I was going to say, I don't think our species, by and large, in the collective, was ever that far advanced. Has always been individuals. But yes, what you're saying on that point about the holistic, the Indians of North America say, I mean, they would think when they made decisions about what they were going to do, they would think seven generations ahead. How is it going to impact seven generations ahead, right?
Right. I still
this
do.
Is, now, to me, and they would talk about Mother Earth. I mean, it was one of the chiefs, I think the chiefs of Seattle, I could be wrong on that, but when some of the some of the representatives from the government was trying to negotiate buying the land, right?
Right.
He didn't understand that what they were talking about. What are you talking about buying? We don't own this land.
Right.
Buying? We are the caretakers. We are the custodians. I mean,
right.
paraphrasing, of course.
He said,
what are you talking? And there was they were the ones that were supposed to be the savages, right?
Right. He I think he said we are borrowing this land from our grandchildren.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's
right.
that's just packed with wisdom.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, so again, I say they are the ones that we have
right.
to civilize them. Is that right?
Right.
You know, just think of the arrogance of that.
Yes. Well, definitely guilty as charged. But let's now. You also refer to true spirituality, and this is another aspect where you say in the book, spirituality is not a sanctuary. From ordeal, but the realm in which all that could be envisioned and internally experienced within human possibility can be realized. Let's get into that a little bit, because that's very powerful as well.
Well, no,
that's
well, yeah,
how
that's
spirituality
what I start the book off with.
Is,
you know, what basically I was thinking about that, see, it's not just a realm of protection or being protected,
yeah,
or just leaving one's inner work in the hands of some intangible entity. It's not just that. See, like the greatest and the highest of what human beings are capable of experiencing. See, and that's is in that spiritual dimension, and much of that, of what we can experience, like it requires pain. I mean, it's pain. You know, it can be hard. It's very, very hard work, And so that's what I'm saying. So it's not just, you know, a place where you retreat to be protected away from the world, as a lot of people are.
Yeah.
You know,
or to relax.
Yeah, you know, I just it's not just that. To me, it's we are capable of extraordinary things. Extraordinary. As you know, if not each individual, then as a species, we're capable of such great things. But see, that to me is in the spiritual realm. That's in the spiritual dimension. That has to do with transformation, transcendence. And once again, I come back to it. It's that inner work. It's that work that each individual has to decide for themselves if they're going to do it or not.
Right.
And if they're going to settle for a life or for a state of being not as profound, not as deep as it could be. And that's what I mean by that experience, you know, what we're capable of experiencing, see. That's where it is.
Now these days, of course, and not to be without compassion for folks who really are just struggling to get through every day and struggling for a paycheck and struggling for the basics of life. We're not really referring to that kind of work-a-day unconsciousness, because there is suffering in there.
Oh, yes,
and there
course.
Is real fear.
Of course. Yeah, but but the reason is because the people in charge aren't really living through that higher consciousness. As we talked a little bit about that earlier. Yeah, that's why you have these problems. We wouldn't have those problems. But no, see, all I'm saying is that people should do what they can do. That's all. You know, according to what you're able to deal with and handle at any point of your life. But see, you still can't make excuses because you're having a hard time of it.
Right.
That means I can neglect the inner work. I can neglect trying to be a better human being, even though I'm getting hit left and right from the world.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that, okay, you know, that I should say, well, all right, you know what, then I'm just going to just, you know, try to screw everybody over too, and I don't care, or hit back or whatever. I mean, and, you know, like in a way that really doesn't accomplish anything.
Right.
You still should try to, get to that. See, that's another thing about the inner life, about the inner world. That's something that the world can't take from you. That's something that all the craziness that goes on out there, that can't get to that. You know, that can't get there. And you can actually develop, you know, like a state, like a place inside where no matter what happens out there, like you develop a strength, a certain inner power that you cannot be defeated, you will not go down. And it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And
you know, like
and
for example, instead of like just being blown away on the lawn, like from outer circumstance, like leaves blowing this way and that, you could be actually the tree there, like with in the root, firmly planted in the ground.
Right.
The strong winds come, you sway here and there, but you're not uprooted. You're standing your ground.
And the word integrity comes to mind, which you write about in the book as well, where you say, there are paths in life that no matter what is achieved, the whole amounts to nothing because integrity did not show anywhere or in anything.
Well, yeah, basically what I was talking about that is like if you stake all of your efforts into the worldly.
Right.
You know, like if you just say, okay, you know, what I want is I want worldly power.
Right.
You know, I want to, you know, just more or less everybody to look at me and say, wow, isn't that,
yeah.
You know, you're the man or whatever. What I was thinking
or
too is like...
Or just material gain.
Yeah. Well, is what you have to do to, you know, as it said, sometimes claw your way up there, right?
Right.
And I have issue about is that really up, but that's another story probably for another time.
But clawing your way down.
Yeah, but all of the people you have to mess with and you have to, you know, like so much of integrity needs to be compromised. I mean, or so much of dignity, so much of what is, you know, really good and true in one's nature, it's like almost selling your soul piece by piece.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to the end of that, what's it worth? You know.
Yeah.
It's like you know because there's so many games that you have to play. There's so many, you know, there's all these schemes and just machinations, I guess, you know.
Yes, yes.
You know, there's some Machiavellian stuff going on.
There's a whole lot of that going on.
What's it worth it at the end if you've done all these things? I mean, and then, comes back to the point where we're only here for a short time, right?
Right.
So did you, you know, you choose door number one, door number two? Did you choose the right door? So what's it all worth at the end? That's just a question. I mean, so.
Well, I'll ask the question. I don't know about your own religious or spiritual background, but do you believe that this is all happening and all these choices are happening independently, or do you believe that there is someone who's actually watching and judging our choices?
Well, I don't know if what I try to do is, write about things that I know from experience, and again, what we have proof that we've seen some humans reach extraordinary levels of development. As far as this is what I do believe, that there are things of the invisible that are working. There's something going on there. There's some kind of power, some source. But as far as what that is, I don't really know. So I think that's probably like another problem that the world has too. Like when they try to put a face on it, like when they talk about God like they try to put a face on it. And see, we can't do that. We can't possibly know what that is. And to me, it's okay not to know.
Right.
As a matter of fact, just the mystery of it all, I think, is so powerful. It is so awe-inspiring.
Yeah, agreed.
You know?
Yeah.
So, so as far as like somebody pulling strings from the sky, I don't know anything. I don't really think that there's a personal God. But again, I come back to the statement, I don't know.
Right, I do not know. But with or without, the point is to do the compassionate, loving, selfless thing while here.
Absolutely. 100% I embrace that. Absolutely I do.
And that spiritual character can take some work, one trial at a time.
That's absolutely, that's it. Yeah, and it comes back to this thing about, there's a lot of people saying that all you have to do is wake up to your greatness, wake up to your divinity and all that and everything. No, I say no. This is probably what you call a radical book, but that's what it is. I don't agree with that.
No, we're being called upon to change in a large way, and my whole life I've always thought it was one heart at a time that this happens, but you know, as things progress, as things become increasingly fragmented or increasingly violent in the world or increasingly, you know, fragile, I realize there may be something corporate going on here as well, where entire, you know, nations or companies or even religious organizations are being called upon now to move forward and have some sort of surrender to growth, because it's the ego that's preventing that from happening.
That is the barrier. Selfishness is the enemy. That is the barrier. It certainly is. But a lot of people, as I said somewhere shortly after the beginning of the show, a lot of people talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
They talk about, we're going to change this, we're going to do this, we're going to step up here, this and that. And there's so much talk. I mean, what do you think the ratio is from talk to actual action, you know, to actually doing something? I mean, certainly not enough to really get things put in the right direction, or you know, what saddens me is I don't see any fostering of the kind of courage and strength that is required to meet the challenges that we've created for ourselves. We've done this to ourselves, see, and the more it's postponed, the more difficult these challenges are. So we need to meet these challenges collectively with a strength and a courage that are as great as the challenge. And I don't see society, at least in the affluent countries, right? I don't see a society fostering that kind of strength and courage, that focus. They're not even focusing on that. As if, you know, it just kind of, what we talked about before, about the, you know, like the toys that they have, all, you know, like with the technology, like all these toys around, and it all seems like, you know, like there's 1,000 diversions. Anything to keep your mind and your focus off the real trouble. Like we raise the unimportant to important, and we put the important aside to just designate it to something unimportant. So I don't see, that's kind of troubling to me. I don't see that going on. I don't see it. So I mean, of course, you know, hope springs eternal, as they say, but I have to be realistic. I mean, certainly not in my lifetime. I don't see any massive change going on while I'm here, but I'm hoping afterwards, you know, I would like to see this experience, this human experience, go on.
Mm, definitely.
Even though I'm not going to be here to see the finale, if there is, I would like to see it go on.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to sacrifice now and do what I can do now to help that along.
Yes, and that is a fascinating story, and it would be great to see, you know, if we made it, cross that bridge.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, as we come towards the last part of the show here, let's just, you know, describe again what is a living spirituality, and how does this spirituality affect others around us and perhaps the world at large?
Well, as far as living spirituality is really not just, you know, professing that you believe in a certain creed or this or that, or just talk about it, but you actually try to live compassion. You actually try to live with consideration and kindness. You actually try to live a less selfish life, a more generous life. Right?
Right.
There's something I can, if you will, something about maturity here. Well, this might speak to some of that. Maturity of the higher order is not achieved until one's concern for the whole of humankind is as vital as one is vital as the concern for one's person, or one's person and family, or one's family and community. For less than this is to not be thinking wisely or humanely. You know, that's what I mean. Like a living spirituality is to be thoughtful about what you're doing in your dealing with others. And when I say others, I don't mean just other human beings, but also other life on this earth. I mean, how, you know, to the slightest action, to the, you know, like to the largest in your life, how is that impacting other people? Is it a fair thing that you're doing? Is it a constructive thing that you're doing? Taking everything. So to live it, to not just talk about it or read about it, you know, or even just think about it. It has to get from the head to the heart.
Exactly.
You have to get, you know, so it's not just thinking about it either. You have to actually try to live it. So that's what I mean, to activate a living spirituality.
Mm. Thank you so much. Now, Carol, as we come to the end of the program, I do want to let listeners know that all of your contact information, book information, and all will be posted on our homepage shortly at GodspeedInstitute.com. I want to thank you right now for being on the program, although I want to add one more reflection after this. I want to thank you for the gift of your book. It's a pleasure to read and very powerful, and I think a really good gateway for people to start beginning to dissect for themselves what does this mean in terms of the choices I make. So I want to thank you for your book and wish you the best of luck with it, and hopefully you can stay in touch.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely appreciate those words, and yes, I will, and I absolutely appreciate what you're doing as well.
Thank you.
You know, I see that you're trying to make a difference, and you know, it's that's really all that you can do, is the best that you can do, and I think that you're one of those people that are doing that, and I thank you in return.
Oh, thank you very much. Once again, Carol Blair, for being on the program today. Now, one of the things Carol spoke about throughout the show were those people who stand apart in history as models for us. And if you're wondering about the actual stepping stones of those folks' lives, I just want to share this with you. This you can also find at GodspeedInstitute.com. It's a series of books called The Saints' Guides to Relationships. And it's important because the spiritual people in history whom we revere as saints have been raised up for us to model the human being utterly turned over to divine love. But at the same time, due to their exalted status, we often find it difficult to see how the deeply human and personal journeys of the saints relate directly to our own, and they do. For example, as a younger person, I looked at the images of Saint Francis of Assisi and saw the peaceful man alone with nature, caressing a deer while a bird rested on his shoulder, and I felt glad for these artistic renderings of his inner peace. But honestly, I didn't know the nuts and bolts of how he arrived at it, and that is the story that assists us in ours. It wasn't until I discovered when I was about 18 years old that there was a young woman whom Francis loved and dedicated himself to and even risked the Franciscan Brotherhood for that I began to find a way into the flesh and blood journey of this world-renowned icon of peace. You see, it wasn't his distant divinity that taught me. It was his passionate humanity, his love for a girl named Claire, his working to establish a better and happier life for himself, his daily struggles with colleagues and finances, his painful challenges with family members. You see, it was his joys and his evolving talents, his frustrations, his search for his right place in the world, the many ways in which his life was like mine and most likely like yours. This was a saint I could take hold of, and I had found a way in. So I'd like to recommend that for you. If you'd like to learn more about the real-life relationships and real-life journeys of how some of the exalted people we revere, how they actually evolved step by step, please visit GodspeedInstitute.com and enjoy the journeys of some very interesting folks. I want to thank you for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City. Our guest was poet and author Carol Blair, and the show was produced by Michael Hallenbeck. The Godspeed Institute is an independent educational organization dedicated to promoting religious tolerance and celebrating the value of spiritually based living. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. And remember to join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems right here on the Progressive Radio Network every week at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.